everybody, and welcome to the RuPaul's Drag Race Recap here on Reality TV Wrap Ups. My name is Mike Bloom, talking about an extremely dramatic, in more ways than one, episode of RuPaul's Drag Race. But of course, I am not alone. First, let me welcome back, after a one-week hiatus, she got picked back up for an eighth season at this point, if we're counting an episode a season. Liana Boris, welcome back to the Recap. How's it going?
Thank you. I'm so happy to be back. And I just have one question. Can we say dick on a podcast?
Been there, done that. I think from the beginning, when we were talking about Trinity Taylor's anus sunburst in her hometown reference, I think we crossed that line a long time ago, Liana. So no need to worry about it. FCC is totally off our backs. But Brent will be out this week as well. So, of course, we're bringing in someone who is basically the fourth chair on the Recap at this point. And I couldn't not bring her back after she eviscerated Brent and I last week during the reading challenge. Lita Brillman, how's it going?
The bitch is back after my infamous performance. Thank you so much for having me back after that. I don't know why you would, but it's going well. I'm happy that Brent isn't here because I was afraid he was going to send us a message this morning and say that we have to come prepared with our own pilot written, directed, and started.
Yeah, it's just slowly becoming the narrative where Brent has become the RuPaul of this podcast, just giving us various amounts of instructions. And some of us will rise to the occasion like Lita did last week, and we'll see if we'll be able to live up to the task this week. But yes, no Brent this week, but Lita, we're so happy to have you back. I'm sure, as much shade as I threw to Brent last week about confusing the two of you in terms of names, I'm sure I'm going to have equally as much of a tough time doing so now, but at least you're not as close as Nina and Tina, unless one of you wants to go by a longer name. That might make things easier.
Val and Lita.
Val and Lita. That's perfect. Early contender for the hashtag, 2 minutes in. You go. All right. Let's just start off this episode because there's a lot to talk about. There was a very eventful task. There were, in true pilot fashion, there were some that soared through the clouds and some that crashed in the middle of the air and some that didn't even make it out of the damn runway. But we start here with coming out of Pheromone's elimination. Before we get into the episode proper, Liana, since we missed you last week, do you have any thoughts about Farrah's fallout or the comedy challenge that we witnessed last week?
Oh, it was like euthanizing a puppy. Poor little Farrah. And even her exit on Untucked, she was trying to be all sexy, and then she just starts whining right at the end. I wish I could say, like Sasha did about Farrah, that her whining was charming. But at least she doesn't whine as much as Brent, so I guess in comparison, Farrah's much better.
Liana's really waking up for not being on that reading challenge last week. So just getting up to the quota that we were at last week. I mean, I do love everyone doing the Pharaoh whining voice. The no, stop it. It's all done in jest, but it's so much fun. And it's a marked impression that Pheromone is going to leave on the world of Drag Race. Whether or not she wants to do that is a thing on its own. But as we hop into the next day, before we get there, Nina Bonina Brown had some business in Untucked that we spoke about last week that's going to be brought to the forefront this week. But it turns out that, surprise, surprise, Nina's got a little bit of a bad attitude. So right from the beginning of this episode, Lita, are you thinking that Nina might wind up near the bottom again, or at least her attitude's going to impact her performance once more?
Yeah, I thought at this point that she was going to go home tonight, and through until the very end of the episode, I thought that she was going to go home, because you don't always, not every episode has flashbacks to Untucked. That's kind of like the producer saying, we need to show some ish that went down, and it did not look good for Nina. And we hear the story from Shay's perspective, which is also not a good sign for Nina. So I just felt like this was the editors burying her a little bit, and I was ready for her to go home this episode.
Oh my gosh, Nina. Okay, first of all, her quote that was something along the lines of, they're not saying my name per se. I was like, girl, you are a conspiracy theorist. Let's get you an aluminum foil hat and go sit in the corner so you don't get abducted by aliens. Like, my God, girl.
Ugh. Nina Bonina Alex Jones is here.
Yeah, get her a bunker. That's where she belongs.
Well, I want to ask you, Liana, it seems like, going back to your winner pick, your main girl, Peppermint, she, unlike Shay, seems to be the one to really comfort Nina in the beginning of this episode. And I feel like we were seeing a lot of Nina and Shay beforehand. Obviously, that relationship has very quickly soured. But are you gleaning anything from the Peppermint Nina relationship? Do you think that now Peppermint might be like Nina's closest lifeline back to the other queens? Or is Nina just furthering alienating herself from the rest of the group?
I mean, it's entirely possible. I think Peppermint is a seasoned queen who sees a girl who's in trouble and wants to go and comfort her. And the fact that Shay's relationship is now essentially trash with Nina, and then with Valentina going home at the end of this episode, it does seem like Peppermint is the one who's closest to Nina. But I mean, really, she's just in her own head, and I don't think anybody can really get that close to her.
Yes, absolutely. She's in her own skull, much like the very prevalent skull that she wore onto the runway. But we'll get to that later. Let's jump to the next day here after Trinity accidentally catches lice from touching Sasha's head. Apparently, we get our maxi challenge. Create, write, and star in your own pilot. Your pilot's on fire. Lita, you're a TV fanatic, comedy especially.
Yes.
Give me your thoughts on the onset about this idea of a challenge. Did it seem like too much from the get-go?
Well, it seemed like too much. That's the operative word, until they actually did the challenge and you realize that they don't actually need to make a pilot. They need to make a commercial for a pilot, which is much easier.
Yeah, that is very true, because I talked about it last week, how I thought this might be one of the hardest tasks in Drag Race history, just because you have seasoned actors, writers, comedians, what have you, spending years crafting a pilot to put out there. Of course, Drag Race wasn't going to do like a full 42-minute what have you, but still, I mean, to have to create something in less than a day is a very, very arduous task, as we saw last time with the roast even. But as you said, it seems like it got scaled back a little bit from our initial expectations, in that, like you said, they really only needed to create like a minute and a half stinger, almost like a promo to show at the upfronts for their new show.
They were all like fighting over who wants to be the voiceover. And I was like, the voiceover in a sitcom? Like, I guess that's a thing sometimes. Like, they have the main character narrate on like Fresh Off the Boat and stuff like that. But I was like, why are they all having a voiceover? This feels very weird. Then they got there and I was like, oh, it's a trailer for a show, or whatever you call a trailer for a TV show.
Who do we think would write a better pilot? David Wright and Cochran, or Sasha and Shay?
Sasha and Shay.
Ooh. Well, yeah, because David Wright and Cochran wouldn't hand in the script, because they'd spend hours upon hours being like, oh, is this good? I don't know. We should redo this part. And they just would never hand it in. They'd have to do like drafts upon drafts upon drafts. Just, they need to gain confidence in themselves. I think if they were able to get a draft in, they could do it. But because Sasha and Shay are just so supremely confident in who they are, I think they'd be able to actually get the paper on the writer's desks.
We've seen Cochran's TV shows. We don't need another Millers.
How you never dare know. Maybe you, Lita.
Maybe they need to join forces. Maybe all the Millers needed were drag queens.
Oh, see, exactly. Oh my gosh. Will
I
Arnett
never thought I'd
queen.
Hear that sentence.
Okay, every show needs more drag queens. Let's be real.
That's very true. It's like that episode of 30 Rock where they put a Seinfeld vision in. I feel like we need like a drag queen vision where they just have drag queens pop into random shows. It can even be like your Dick Wolf Chicago Hope show where they just have a drag queen need to get treated for God knows what at the medical facility. But the other interesting thing as well that sort of, again, maybe scales back some of the difficulty is that instead of doing this individually like we might have initially expected, they're asked to divide into two pairs and one threesome. So a couple of questions about this one. First, Liana, do you feel like the job is made that much easier by working together, or do you think it might be complicated depending on who you're working with?
Oh, I mean, I think it can definitely be complicated depending on who you're working with. We saw Sasha and Shay work really well together, but then we also saw a lot of animosity and fighting kind of between Peppermint and Alexis. And I think ultimately it probably turned out well, but I'm sure we can think of so many examples of where having two people paired together does not go so well. Especially, I mean, even just Nina and Valentina, you had two very creative but disorganized queens working together. And clearly that was a recipe, as Alexis would say, for disaster, which she should have said disaster. I don't understand why that hasn't been
a recipe for princess disaster.
Exactly.
That thing, that Aja's princess has really been following this season like the gas cloud that was her sidekick. Lita, we have, as I said before, two pairs and one threesome, because there are seven queens left. At the onset, again, personalities aside, is there more of an advantage to work directly with one person or in a trio?
I feel like it's hard to say, because it I guess, depends on who you are. I just finished college, so I'm at the peak of I hate group projects in my life. So I think it would be much better to just work with one person. But honestly, the way that these shook out, I feel like it didn't really matter. Like, it seemed like Nina and Valentina, like, did not have an aptitude to this regardless, because it didn't really seem like they were fighting. Like, they didn't seem to be holding each other back. Mm-mm. They just seemed to not really be great at this. So I think ultimately it didn't super matter, and it kind of shook out that, like, Sasha and Shay, I think, are the two front runners to win this season. So, like, it made sense. But I think even if they had both been working individually, they both still would have done great.
It's interesting in that there is sort of this idea where sometimes it's good to work with your friends, because, as you said, if you have a chemistry that you can bounce off of, especially in a performative capacity, that totally works out. But sometimes I feel like if you join up with someone who has a similar work mentality, like, I feel like if Nina was with even with, like, Peppermint, and it seemed like, I don't know if Peppermint, we'll talk about the moment where Alexis grabs Peppermint to go into the trio. I'm not sure if Peppermint was going to work with Nina or what, but I feel like if Nina was working with someone who had much more of a work ethic, if Nina was like, you know what, we can just improvise, they would have said, hell no, we're not doing that. But for some reason or another, maybe it's because they almost had the same attitude towards it as you're sort of talking about, Lita. That's why they sort of decided to go forward with this really horrible idea to not prepare anything beforehand.
But at least they had fun. And isn't that what matters?
Exactly. Oh, yes. As we know with TV, it's all about whether or not the actors have fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really what it's
about.
Well, so I just spoke about this, but we have Sasha and Shay pair off immediately because they have undeniable chemistry. It's what won them the news anchor challenge. We have Peppermint try to go for Nina or Valentina, either or, but Alexis decides to grab her to try to join up with this Trinity, in a way, leaving Nina and Valentina behind. Lita, what did you think Peppermint was going for on the other side of the room? And do you think she should have, or I mean, why do you think Alexis decided to grab her as well instead of just work with Trinity?
I think that Alexis, I don't know. Alexis is a very assertive person, and she probably had some sort of idea that being with three people would give her an advantage, maybe. So she wanted to just, like, have more people to work with. I'm not sure what Peppermint was going for originally, but it's hard to say because Nina says that everybody walked right by her and didn't want to work with her. But I'm sort of inclined to believe whatever the opposite of Nina's paranoid statements are. So that makes me think that maybe Peppermint was going to work with her.
I think Peppermint was going for Sasha and Shay. I mean, when you are in a team challenge, I mean, there's definitely an assumption to be made that you're going to be judged as a team. And why would you not want to pair up with two people who are really, really strong? And I think that's also partly why Alexis grabbed Peppermint, because Peppermint was just coming off a win. And so having somebody who's strong in your trio helps you overall and helps you with the judges.
That's a really good point, Leon. I didn't even think about the idea that she was trying to join up with the pair of Shay and Sasha as well. But yeah, she ends up joining up with Alexis and Trinity, leaving Nina and Valentina. Nina, as you said, Alita takes a lot of umbrage to that. She basically is singing Mr. Cellophane from Chicago at the top of her lungs at this point. It's interesting that Alexis decides to really form this trio, because we get into this writing idea creation process. And Alexis is now saying, okay, I want to have a larger part in this because I feel like I really need to prove myself. Because obviously, we know that, you know, people were seeing green and not in a good way from her stint last time during the roast of Michelle Visage. But wouldn't you think on paper that, you know, if I am on with somebody else, I'm inherently sharing more airtime than if I'm on with three people? And we're going to see later on that Alexis gets the note that she's a little obscured because, you know, Peppermint and Trinity might be a little more flashy, and she's just sort of suffers as a result. Leona, do you think that might be an inherent disadvantage of being in a trio?
Okay, I'm sorry. I haven't been listening to the thing you said, because I cannot get over last week, her green chicken cutlets. What on earth, girl? They're not even the same color. That from her, like, witch outfit that wasn't supposed to be a witch. I also loved her calling out Tamar Braxton. and being like, oh, have you seen the show? Oh, my goodness. That was absolutely fantastic.
And not to speak too much towards the ending, but just when I thought I was done clenching from all the awkwardness of last week, then we get to the lip sync this week. So I'm producing enough diamonds out of my butt at this point to have Valentina stone her outfits to the high heavens.
Oh, my gosh. Just like the big diamond that Alexis was wearing.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm sorry I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No, anyway. Yeah, I mean, going back to having to share time when you're with three people, I don't think that ultimately it would have been that much of a detriment because you still have, I mean, still only three people and you still have an opportunity to stand out. Also, having three people and having three characters maybe gives you more opportunities to come up with something creative, although it was said that their concept was a little tried. But I don't think that was really crossing her mind that, oh, no, if I have three people, that's not going to allow me to stand out.
I think it was crossing her mind that if she has three people, she has more opportunities to put the blame on other people if it doesn't go well.
Yeah, so many buses are pulling into the depot right now for her to just throw her queens underneath.
Yeah.
Oh, just like the bus that left Roxy.
Roxy, yes, exactly. I've actually seen some comparisons between Roxy and Alexis, and I think they're fundamentally different queens, but I mean, that could be one small similarity between the two if we're going along with that metaphor.
Oh, that's so mean.
random tangent, by the way, because this is when we start to get to like our first commercial break. Did y'all watch the Gay Watch with Bob and Katya interstitials?
Yes. Oh my gosh, I loved it.
All right, Lita, give me your thoughts.
Oh my God, Katya blowing the whistle when anybody gave a dumb answer. I feel like we need to implement that on some podcasts on this network. It was incredible.
I think I saw a comment on Reddit somewhere that was like, unleashing Bob and Katya on unsuspecting heteros. Yes. Oh my goodness. I laughed so hard.
They just like asked them like, what would Zac Efron's drag name be? And people were like, oh, it's like Zacharina. And Katya was just like, nope. Whistle. That's dumb.
This is the Billy on the Street spinoff that the yes. world needs right now.
Oh my God. Completely exactly.
And again, like, I love this Bob and Katya pairing. One thing I do like about the Drag Race community is that since everyone comes from a performative background, it allows them to come together in these random pairings. Like, I loved Katya and Detox in All Stars 2, how that came to be. And now Katya and Bob do their stuff together. Maybe Katya is the common denominator here. But yeah, they did the Zac Efron thing. They did their own little promo. They tried to do running down. They asked people to run down the beach in slow motion. I highly suggest people try it. I don't know if people compilated an entire set of the clips, but I encourage people to try to check it out if they can, because that was a lot of fun.
This Baywatch movie has done like the best guerrilla advertising in reality TV I've ever seen, because they had the Big Brother Canada thing where they all watched Baywatch for like a reward. Then they had this during RuPaul's Drag Race, and three different people in the Bachelorette bios, three different men mentioned Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
What?
So it's making me really want to see it.
Well, I mean, it'll be really funny like a month from now where we're going to be like, hey, remember when everyone made this big deal about that Baywatch movie? And not to say I'm a fan of, like, you know, I was underestimated like the 21 Jump Street movie reboot series. And it seems like they're going for that tongue in cheek atmosphere. But I don't know. Commercials have not been great so far, but trailers can be misleading. But that's my tangent on how I predict the Baywatch reboot will do. Thank you all for tuning in. I'm so glad. I know everyone wanted to hear that. Let's get back to actually talking about RuPaul's Drag Race. We get to the shooting the pilot with Michelle and Carson. Now, I want to save a little bit of talk about the pilots themselves, obviously, from when we get to the main stage. But Liana, do you have any specific notes about these rehearsal processes as Carson and Michelle give some direction to these queens?
Yeah, I always like seeing the rehearsal process because, you know, not only do you get to see the final product at the end, but you get to see, you know, all of the preparation and kind of how they were going to have to edit it together. I mean, oh my gosh, like Nina and Valentina's, I was shocked with the way it came out, that it was at least somewhat cohesive, because it looked all over the place. I mean, all over the place.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I just cannot talk enough about how much of a dumb move it is to walk into a rehearsal and say, you know, this is not the newscast challenge where it was like, yeah, well, you have a script, but like we can, you know, free ball off of it a little bit depending on what the circumstances are. They had no plan whatsoever. And so they had to take time in the middle of the rehearsal process. They'd be in the middle of the moment, they'd stop and be like, you know what? I don't think I should say that. I should say something else. This just seems entirely ridiculous and unprofessional. Lita, are you as livid about this as I am?
I literally zoned out and was like on social media while they were doing this, because they just like, until they were like painting each other's faces and at least like Michelle was laughing, it was just nothing. Like, it was just them fumbling around. I was like, I don't need this secondhand embarrassment from them not even being able to know their own character's name.
Oh my gosh. When they said, let's just improv during the preparation, I was like, uh-oh, this is going downhill. Yeah, exactly.
And it very much showed, considering that, like, as you said, Lita, they did get some laughter during the doing their makeup session. But I mean, Carson was tuberculosis laughing from the other two pilots. And here they got nary a chuckle out of him. So I think that was definitely definitive. And it seemed like, from what we're reading between the lines, I think Nita and Valentina also knew that it stunk, because I think as soon as they saw the viewing on the runway, which we'll talk about in a little bit, you know, Nina said she didn't even look at the judges because she knew it tanked that badly.
I just didn't understand the plot of this. Why did they have to become drag queens to get out of prison?
We'll talk about it. The entire feature-length film plot.
Because I need some explanation.
Okay, well, I'm going to have to make a riddle and smoothie first if we're really going to talk about this.
I feel like Lita going onto social media was her form of a riddle and smoothie to get through that rehearsal process.
Oh, my gosh. But really, though, when they were sitting on the floor, and I think Valentina, they're talking, and then Valentina goes, no, let's say drag queens together. It was like little kids making a movie, but they're not going to edit it out. And so the parents watch it later. They're like, that's really great, kids. And all their improvs are in there.
I don't know if Michelle wants to be associated with being a parent of some of these drag queens, considering how old they are. But I completely agree. That's a really apt comparison, because, yeah, they had to sit there and watch them. But then in the middle of them, they're essentially showing how unprepared they are by being like, no, let's just change things on the fly. You know, there's a difference between doing a shot and saying, let's change things, or taking direction, or in the middle of your line, you know, it'd be me asking like, hey, you know, Lita, we're going to get to this club kid segment. No, wait. Okay. No, I want to bring up this first. Okay. So let's go back to Carson's coughing. It's something that doesn't exactly exude professionalism, but let's move on to this makeup session, talking about the runway, which is Club Kid Couture. Lita, how much did you know about the club kid scene going into this episode?
A decent amount, I would say, because I was lucky enough to take a class here at Michigan called Dancing Woman, Dancing Queer, about queer performance in the U.S.
Cool.
This was something that I knew a little bit about. I was really, really appreciative to see it represented on the show, because a lot of the time you don't really see, I think that we see a lot more of like kind of super artsy or like super pageant, like you just want to look beautiful, and there's not a lot of the just like, we're just throwing out being a female impersonator and just doing this like really specific and amazing style of drag that is like all concept and all art and has nothing to do with being like beautiful or being feminine or whatever. So I love that, and I loved some of the queens' appreciation for the history of that. It reminded me of like what you see in like Priscilla, Queen of the Desert sometimes, where like it's drag, but they're not really dressed like women. They're just dressed like giant fish or something like that.
Well, I think Shay says it best, that it's all about becoming a piece of moving art.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, that was all, it's always really cool to see. And it was really neat to see all of the outfits that the queens have put together.
Yeah, we will definitely talk about that. And also, you know, speaking outside the club kid aspect and just speaking about the segment itself, I know that we had been wringing our hands a little bit at the idea that it has seemed like we've fallen into a pattern with this mirror talk of a super serious situations being talked about, and then cover girl, like snap your fingers, let's have some fun on the runway. This was a little bit less of a tonal whiplash, so I'm grateful for that, while also providing again a very important history lesson in drag. Liana, were you happy to see? I wouldn't say there was more levity to this, but there at least did not seem to be as much dramatic piano music throughout this segment as in previous weeks.
Yeah, they can keep their dramatic piano music. I'm okay with that. I was very happy to see more humor. I mean, I actually, it took rewatching the episode where I actually noticed, I was like, oh, there was no, you know, sort of RuPaul's group therapy moment. And I was very happy for that. I would rather see Shay hot gluing stuff to her face after all.
I'm surprised the music
stuff
wasn't playing off of that.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's how they could have put it in. Ugh. Anyway, maybe it's because Nina was slightly happier this episode. I don't know.
RuPaul's group therapy moment would have been a better pilot idea than Valentina and Nina's.
Well, which do you think would be better, RuPaul's group therapy moment or the entirety of RuPaul's Drag U?
Oh, my God. I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, that's I remember, actually, I think that was a moment of the RuPaul's roast, because it's fresh off of my memory because I watched that again last week with somebody talking about like the failed concept that was RuPaul's Drag Race. I think it inspired a lot of drag queens, but it just did not coalesce as a concept. I know I very much started watching Drag Race after the fact. Again, another random tangent here. Did either one of you watch Drag U in its time?
I did. Yeah,
I did.
What'd you
Maybe
think
Cochran wrote for Drag U.
What did I think of it? It was not a part of my memory until you just brought it up. That was like not something I had ever thought about.
Okay, so I think that's very indicative.
Yeah, it is something we all try to forget. Like, oh, I don't know her.
Drag U earns the Lisa Kiefer Award of RuPaul's life. Something we just try to forget about. All right, let's get to the runway itself. Club Kid Couture. How I want to do this is I want to talk about the individual looks first, as I think they base their own discussions, and then we can sort of talk about each of the three pilots in their own individuality. But first, we have a couple of guest judges this episode, along with Michelle, and Carson's decked out a little bit. Loved his eyeliner.
Yeah.
But we have Lisa Robertson and Noah Galvin of the Real O'Neills. Alita, again, you are a comedy nerd. Have you watched the now deceased Real O'Neills?
I haven't, but my best friend loved it, and I trust him with all of my TV opinions. So
did you know anything about Noah Galvin coming into this?
I did not, but he's adorable.
Oh my gosh, whatever. He's younger and more talented than me. I hate him.
Well, okay, so what I will say, because sort of like you, Lita, my wife, Angela, loved the Real O'Neills. She just kind of pop on an episode whenever she needed to put something on. And Noah Galvin's great, but from what I remember, I believe Noah Galvin got into a little bit of a controversy when he made some. I won't say the remarks on air, but if you can Google it, I think he said some pretty racy little offensive remarks, and as a result, people might have said as a result, Real O'Neills had like a truncated second season and a subsequent cancellation. But I'm happy he was able to find a venue here. I'll be completely honest, y'all. I tried to Google as much as I could. I have no idea who Lisa Robertson is.
She's a QVC lady.
That shows. If people remember the Celebrity Apprentice podcast, I am no Megan Z. I did not play QVC in my backyard when I was a kid. So now I know.
Yeah, it was so funny because clearly they've run out of the budget to get real stars after they spent all their money on Lady Gaga. So they're like, oh, here was a woman who is at the studio across the street. Oh, she's on QVC. Sure, let's bring her in, even though it makes absolutely no sense to have her on this challenge.
Well, let's just talk briefly about them. Lita, did these guest judges really stand out to you? Were they adequate? Did any of them fail in any regard?
Well, now I feel like I don't want to say anything nice about Noah Galvin because I don't know what he said.
So plead the fifth on Noah Galvin.
Yeah, I don't want to Google this controversy right now because I feel like it will color all of my opinions. But yeah, I mean, as per usual, I thought they were both like fine.
I don't even remember Lisa.
Yeah,
like what did she say? Oh, you know what? I remember what she did say. She said that her least favorite pilot was Peppermint's Trinity and Alexis.
Yeah.
And in the words of Brent, I was like, girl, bye.
Yeah, this will be the lone viewer of the Nina and Tina show on at 4 a.m. It's going to be their number one fan. Because, yeah, I think Lisa, I think she said something about how she loved Valentina's Matador look, which Michelle then counters by saying it was not club kid. It was more high fashion. But I think those were only her two contributions, so she might also earn the Lisa Kiefer Memorial Award for
exactly.
This episode. Let's get to the looks themselves, starting off with our winning pair here. Sasha specifically wearing this really interesting clown blue sequin fluffy pink look. Lita, from this crown look, were you laughing or crying?
You know, I was okay. I saw a lot of people that were super into this, and I'm starting to think that maybe my lack of enthusiasm for it is just for my hatred of clowns after reading like 900 News AF stories about clowns a few months back when like the killer clowns were a big thing again. They had a revival. But this wasn't my favorite, but I can see where people are coming from when they liked it. You don't see too many clowns on the runway. I think we have seen it before, but it was memorable, which is good.
Does Bianca Del Rio's makeup count as clowns on the runway?
No, Bianca is gorgeous. This is terrifying.
Wow, clowns can be gorgeous, Liana. That's so offensive.
That's very clownist of me.
Pagliacci made a whole show out of being a clown, so clowns can do whatever they want. Liana, what do you think about Sasha's look this week?
I mean, I guess if we're talking about a piece of art, this definitely does look like a piece of art. She kept the eyebrow theme, but then went a little wonky on the one. I didn't quite get, and I don't know if this was on purpose, the contrast between the first dress she ever wore, that like really actually gorgeous blue dress, and then kind of the pink fluffy thing. It does look, talk about two outfits, it looked like they were just pushed together, because that's kind of what I was getting out of this. Also, I don't like clowns, and I really hate that hat. It looks like a dunce cap.
Yeah, or like a stocking cap that like an old man in 18th century France would wear. I do agree with you, Liana, though, that I feel like I don't think I needed the blue dress. It did sort of feel like two different parts of a costume put together. But that being said, if we're going with this sort of interesting artistic idea, I mean, that's Sasha's, to quote Ross Matthews, point of view. And I feel like from that perspective, it really came from her wheelhouse. Did she blow me away? No, but she blew me away with everything else she was doing this week. And so, you know, I don't feel like her outfit really spoke out against her. That would, I feel like if there were, if they gave out the win to one person instead of two, I feel like what we're about to talk about next with Shay might have her edge out Sasha. But if we're, you know, if we're rewarding one pair entirely, I feel like Sasha's outfit is not knocking her down that many pegs.
She's got double eyebrows, I just realized. If anybody wants to go back and look, she's got these little purple eyebrows, and then she's got her like weird spiky eyebrows on top.
Oh boy!
I just want to. I want to point that out.
I'm gonna have to get the double rainbow guy in there to sing a song about Sasha's double eyebrows.
Eyebrows! Wow.
So let's move on to Shay Coulee here. Lita, what'd you think about Shay's Club Kid Couture look?
I really liked this one. It was a little busy, and it's another thing where it's just a swimsuit with the jacket. But there's Rocky Horror lips on her leotard, so I'm obsessed with it. And I think it's hard to have this kind of thing without it being busy. I mean, it needs to catch your eye and fit the theme, which I feel like she did well. I was into it. It's not my favorite Shay look so far, but I really liked it.
Well, this is what Shay has done, exactly like you said, Lita, is that it's this bathing suit with a coat over it. And that was her look during the maxi challenge also, which mini challenges. Remember when those were a thing? Anyway,
there was one last week.
Okay, we've had what? How many?
We've had like three.
Two?
Three?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Anyway, so yeah, I mean, I totally get what you're saying, that it's busy. And so this is kind of seems to be, we've seen this a lot now from her, where it's this bathing suit, the coat, but because of all the details that she puts on it, I do think that it makes it stand out. So she's got her like Mexican wrestler mask thing with the crown that she's borrowed from Sasha. And then she, you know, hot glued stuff to her face, which Tyra, season two, that gets you somewhere. So if you're ever on RuPaul's Drag Race, hot glue something to yourself and you'll win.
Oh my God. Also, speaking of bathing suits, did we notice that Rue's dress this week was like Debbie's bathing suit, but a ball gown?
Oh my gosh, I definitely had that written down. I was like, this is something Debbie would wear to the finale.
It's just like a tiger on her stomach.
Yeah, who knew? Debbie Wanner was also a seamstress as well. So I think she's putting out her own line after the rampant success of the tiger print bathing suit. I didn't even recognize that. I was more so noticing, I know we spoke about like Sasha's look is almost like a two-in-one. Rue had like that pattern as you were talking about, then like this also like dark garment behind her, as almost as if it just sort of got tacked on to the end of it. But it still looked good. I do want to, now that we're sort of talking about these two, I want to throw out a blanket question to you both. What did you think overall about this Club Kid Couture look? Because these are the two looks part of the two winning queens. Do you feel, Lita, that the queens hit the mark on this theme overall, or did they come in a little short?
All the queens overall, or just these?
Yeah. Overall, just like
Yeah, definitely. I think that there were a couple that were, you know, a stretch, and the judges commented on it. But I think overall, people got the spirit of it. I was a little nervous that someone like Valentina, who's, we'll get to it, but her look was really not my favorite, that she would kind of disregard the whole theme because she's such a new queen and because she's young and might not really have an appreciation for this culture. But I feel like everyone at least made an effort. No one like jettisoned the theme.
I thought Trinity and Peppermint were the two that did the best. The others were, I mean, maybe Shay's. I think, again, we've talked about this, whether or not a look is directly replicated or whether or not it's inspired by. And I would definitely say that a lot more of these looks were inspired by. Alexis Michelle's was not. And really, neither was Valentina's, I didn't think. But I would say they kind of missed the mark a little bit.
Well, let's talk about somebody who, according to the judges, very much missed the mark, at least from a part of her wardrobe. Nina Bonina Brown, Anderson Lee, really producing this like Ghost Rider realness looking skull painted on her face. As a result, you get a little bit of like the Operation Ribcage painted over her chest. And then she sort of finishes it off with like a roughly pink skirt. Lita, what'd you think about Nina's look?
So this is one theme where I can give her a pass on face painting because that makes sense with the theme for sure. I think that if you're going to have a bare chest, you need to completely paint it or do something more artistic with it than just have like a couple of things thrown on it and then have it be otherwise just completely bare. This just didn't really fly with me. The skirt was very lazy. However, it was on theme.
Ugh. Mm-hmm. Nina Bonina, straight from the graveyard brown, I thought was, apart from the neck up, was great. Everything from the neck down was awful, in my opinion. And she also, when she's going down the runway, she does that same, like, crouches and, like, pats her chest kind of thing, which it worked for some of the earlier looks, but it doesn't really work for this. Like, you're supposed to be a skeleton. I don't know. I didn't quite get it. I was like, this is a skirt and like arm warmers that the girls are going to wear to the EDM concerts while they're rolling. And I don't quite get like where you're going. And then also I completely agree with the whole chest thing. Either completely paint it, or if you don't get a chance to do it, throw something on, because really the head is such the centerpiece of this look that almost you need something that kind of downplays everything else in order to make that stand out. But I do have a question. I wonder if she contours her head. Because that came up with Sasha. How does one contour one's head?
I mean, I guess it's easier when you're bald like Sasha is. And I guess maybe Nina used like a bald cap or something. But I guess I'm assuming it takes effort and talent because you have to look at like how the light hits your head at certain angles. I have no experience of that as of yet, but maybe that's an excuse for me to shave my head and see if I can experiment with it on the podcast.
It's pretty impressive. But, yeah. You know, I don't know. It's so hard to keep up with beauty standards these days, let alone head shape. So it's okay.
I know. Face contouring is the new fidget spinners in terms of the things the kids are all doing these days. Did I do it? Did I catch the meme correctly at the right time?
Oh my God, get out, Mike. You're canceled.
Hey. No, but my pilot didn't get picked up. No, life in bloom.
There's nothing wrong with fidget spinners, and there's also nothing wrong with not being able to contour your face, because I am completely inept at that.
Speaking for the kids these days. So what I'll say about Nina is that I think that if we're just, you know, if they cut off her head a la Vivacious and Darianne Lake during that season 6 horror challenge and put it in a box and put that box on the runway and opened it up like Brad Pitt in 7, it would look great. Even besides the skull, you have like this really interesting like black spiky mohawk on her head. You got the crow sticking out of her head. It was a really cool look. But again, if we're putting ourselves in the head of Nina Bonina Brown, which is a scary thing to do because that's just rampant paranoia, it feels like, I'm assuming that she spent all this time on this, that she's like, oh crap, I have nothing else to this look. Let me just paint this on. Like, the rib cage was barely finished, and then she just like throws on a pink skirt that, you know, like you said, is comparable to what a 17-year-old girl would bring to her first Skrillex concert. So I feel like it's sort of a mismatch. I think Nina shows her artistry in what she did with her head and how, if she has the time and the effort, she's really able to pull it off. But then we also see the downside in this outfit in that, you know, if and when she's in her head and is concentrating on too many things, things can get a little slipshod. And I think after this week, especially, it's so interesting to watch Nina's trajectory, where she really came in blasting out of the gate, but she is barely limping to the finish line at this point.
Speaking of Vivacious, I bet she was shook she didn't get this challenge.
I was thinking about Vivacious this whole time because she actually, like, this was her brand of drag. And I was thinking, like, we haven't had anyone. I guess Milk was kind of a similar thing, but Vivacious was so much older, so it was more, like, authentic to herself. But I was just thinking about how we don't have any queens like that this season, or we haven't for a while.
Wasn't she on SNL last night?
Vivacious? Or,
yeah, someone performed with Katy Perry. I saw it on Reddit.
Yeah, there were a couple of drag queens performing with Katy Perry. I will admit someone did look like Vivacious, but I can't officially confirm. If y'all out there in the Rehab Ups universe can confirm that, that'd be great. But that'd be some great, I mean, between the, we didn't talk about this on the podcast, but the Chris Pine sketch from a few weeks ago where they outright name drop Trinity Taylor to this, drag queens are pervading the SNL mainstream, which from my own synergetic perspective in terms of my podcast, I'm more than happy to see.
I just Googled it. It was Vivacious.
Yeah, it was Vivacious. I'm looking at the picture right now.
I haven't seen it yet, but
I'm actually recording the SNL podcast, a little bit inside baseball, like a couple hours after I finish this one. So, and thank you for providing me with that factoid I can now put in my pocket and use for later. So let's move on to Valentina here, the other member of our ultimate bottom two, rocking this red matador outfit with the mask that is going to come into much more significance later on. Now, as I mentioned before, Michelle's gonna say this is more high fashion than it is club kid. Lita, do you agree with Michelle's assessment here?
Yeah, but I also see the effort that Valentina put in to match the theme, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving her the benefit of the doubt because I do really like Valentina, everything from this episode aside, literally everything. But, I mean, I didn't hate it. It was fine. It was, I don't know. It was a little confusing, but she looked good.
The runway theme was an effort, though. The runway theme was club kids.
So. No, I mean, I think that the effort was to fit the theme. I think I can see her line of thinking with the thing over her face. And, you know, I don't think that she was just like, this is kind of weird, so it counts. Like, I think that she was trying. She just missed the mark.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, this definitely falls on more under high fashion for me. I would definitely agree with that. And then the infamous mask, which, oh, we had no idea what we were getting into. We were so young.
Yeah.
But I mean, I did like the matador look, although her from the very first episode, this reminded me of that, the look to represent your hometown look.
It was mariachi was the one for her hometown. But it's a little bit, again, very odd bookending that she starts with a mariachi and ends with a matador.
It truly was her arc.
Do we think there's a curse of the matador outfit now, by the way, considering that her and Cynthia Lee Fontaine both went out wearing matador-like looks?
Ooh, I like that. I'm all for conspiracy theories. So much like Nina Bonina Brown.
Yes.
So I'll go with it. The only thing, okay, I would take off the she's got the black belt and then she's got this like jeweled thing. I would have taken that off, but I liked it. I really liked her nails too.
Yeah, the nails were really interesting. And it's interesting that in addition to this like club kid thing, again, we're talking about like bookends. First episode had the Gaga look, which some of which, again, I am no expert in this regard, but I would almost compare some club kid stuff to stuff that Lady Gaga has done. It reminds me of, I think Nina did that infamous like red fabric stocking look with the long nails. So lots of, you know, memory triggers in this episode of Drag Race for me.
The applause look too is very club kid.
Yes, very much so. So it's interesting, and I'm happy that I really like this theme as well, because I feel like the best runway themes are those that allow the queens to have a good idea of like where they're coming from, but still be able to like base an outfit out of it entirely. Unlike something maybe like the Fairy Tale Challenge, where we were saying, "Oh, that's not a princess, that's not a princess." Here, the rules are a little less stringent, so it allows the queens to really get creative. And Valentina, as always, works the hell out of whatever she's wearing. So you have to give her much kudos there, because we might not be giving her a lot of kudos later on in this episode. Spoiler alert.
Wah, wah. Oh, I loved her lower eyelashes. Those were cute. What else can I say nice before we move on?
Well, let's put a pin on those lashes and let's move on to Trinity Taylor, someone who you talked about this before, really, I think, knocked this look out of the park. She was super nervous going into this because this really is not her style. But I mean, for me, week after week, Trinity Taylor has really proved how much of a formidable force she is in nearly every aspect of Drag Race, even amidst some stumbles. Lita, do you agree?
yeah, this was fantastic. And this showed a real appreciation for the style. And, you know, it is a hard theme to critique because it's hard to sit here and say, like, well, this is Club Kid or this isn't Club Kid, because the whole genre was kind of about expanding the idea of what fashion and art and drag and performance is. But that said, this was extremely Club Kid in a way that was unexpected, but also still very on theme. It was just gorgeous. I loved it.
Oh my goodness. I may be an emotional hot mess, but Trinity is my favorite this week and hopefully will be my favorite, I think, for the rest of the season. I'm really rooting for her to win. I think Shay's going to ultimately end up winning, but Trinity is hilarious. Shows so much versatility. I mean, the fact that she came out and she was like, I've never done a look like this before. And I think hers was one of the best, if not the best Club Kid look that was put together. And then also her kind of weird, drugged out, walking Blade Runner thing that she was doing. I don't like quite know what that was, but it was perfect and it fit. It was, I mean, the opposite when you think of a pageant queen. So kudos to her. I mean, oh my gosh. And she had Cheetos on her fingers, or what looked like Cheetos. I love those. Robotic venereal disease realness. She got it down.
Absolutely. And good for her. It's clear she's a Brad Culpepper fan, considering how many blue hanging balls she had on her outfit.
Or a Coco Montrese fan with their Cheeto fingers.
That's true. It's the perfect mingling of Coco Montrese and Brad Culpepper that everyone wanted. I'm going to make a bold claim right now. For me, final three is pretty much locked in at this point to be Trinity, Shay, and Sasha. I think that they're the three that have by far proven themselves the most. Sasha has stumbled once. Trinity has stumbled a couple of times. But I think, especially now that such a big front runner in Valentina has been taken out, I really don't see, and hopefully I'm not jinxing this for any of them, I don't see any instance in the remaining like three episodes until the final three are revealed that we see them screw up so badly that they end up leaving before any of those other three queens. Lita, do you agree?
I actually don't. I can definitely see a dogfight between Trinity and Peppermint to get to the finale. Oh.
Okay.
Especially after the last couple weeks that Peppermint has had. I know that she had a very rough first half of the season or so, but these last couple weeks she's just been killing it and she has momentum now.
Well, stopped wearing pink.
Yes.
Well, she's wearing red now, so she moved from pink to red, which is a good thing. Let's talk about Peppermint, because I mean, my notes just said wow, and I don't mean world of wonder. I mean just genuine amazement at the look that she was able to produce. Clearly this is one of the ones that she really prepared to bring with her from the get-go, just because there was so much specificity and so much artistry behind it that it was nothing short of incredible from my point of view. Liana, do you agree?
I mean, it wasn't just the outfit. It was the makeup for me that really sold this outfit as Club Kid, especially that and maybe the bow. Because really, like when I first saw her come out, I was thinking Jinx Monsoon from the Candy Challenge. But this is like what it should have been. But really, I mean, the way she sold it, her attitude, the facial expression she was making paired with that makeup. I mean, my goodness, I was blown away. I think for me, it's a fight between Trinity Taylor and Peppermint for the best look of the evening. And really, I mean, it was artistic. It had the silhouette was just fantastic with the skirt. And she really pulled it off.
Mm-hmm. Lita, what'd you think about Peppermint?
Yeah, I had forgotten about the candy challenge until I saw this look last night. And I went back and looked at some of these candy outfits, and I'm looking at them again right now. And they're just so understated and lame. And this like was just so incredible and just set such a higher standard. Like even Alaska, like she looks really good. She's just like covered in pink fluff and gumballs glued to her. Like it's just so underwhelming. And like, I don't know. I feel like I really identified with Princess Lollipop or whoever her name is when I was like four and playing Candyland. She like was pretty. And this was really just made me want like a better candy challenge to like emanate those characters.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So first of all, at least, I mean, to be fair, like Peppermint didn't actually have to make her outfit out of candy, because I remember when Alaska started to fall apart, she was supposed to be cotton candy or something like that. And Jinx's was a hot mess. Roxy's though, that was gorgeous. I loved Roxy's outfit because that was
like the
one
zebra stripe gum or whatever.
Yeah, well, it was the, like, I don't know what those little candy ropes are, but she glued those all over. And, oh, my goodness, it was so pretty. And then I forgot what else I was going to say, so I'm gonna stop.
Well, I was just wondering if you had your own favorite Candyland character.
Oh, that's what I was gonna say about Candyland. No, I don't. But one of my friends and I, we were like, oh, remember Candyland? We used to play that game when we were little. So we were at this bar that has a bunch of games at it, and we found Candyland. Candyland is way simpler than I remember. It's literally
there's no strategy. It's just
no,
luck.
No. Well, Candyland is pretty much determined from the get-go because everyone draws their cards in a specific order, so you can't even trade the cards. Like, no. I mean, there's a reason why it's made for like very young children to get simple understandings of game mechanics.
Yeah, I remember it being much more complicated when I was younger, but I was dropped a lot on my head as a child, so that probably makes sense. But anyway, that's all I have to say.
Is that one way you contour your head, by dropping people on it?
Yeah, that's the natural way to do it if you don't want to do it with makeup, but, you know.
We are not a parenting podcast. We should probably say that from the get-go.
Lord Licorice was kind of hot, though, right?
Lord Licorice would make an amazing drag queen.
He kind of looks like milk. I'm looking
at
the picture.
Lord Licorice has those gams for days. I don't know how we got
onto this. He's pointing his toe so hard in this picture that I'm looking. It's really nice.
Wait, now I want to look up Candy Crush characters.
No, Candy Crush.
Candy Crush characters. And
oh, my God.
A new hit game show. Candy.
Oh my gosh, I know.
I
can't believe that's going to be a game show. Like, really? Was The Wall not a big enough hit? Okay. Who is the... I'm looking at her right now. Who is the... She was wearing, like, blue and white. What's her name?
Oh yeah. Like, she's like a mil- like a maid or something.
Let me see. I need characters.
She was like a queen. Queen Frostine.
Queen Frostine, yes. Okay, she's my favorite.
That is a good drag name.
I think we stumbled upon a new theme for RuPaul's Drag Race episode.
Candyland characters?
Yes! Oh like my gosh.
What about the little like gumdrop little monsters? That would be a fun one.
There was some sort of kind of marsh or something.
Molasses swamp. Yeah, we have totally lost people at this point.
That's
thank
gloppy.
You for sticking around and listening to us just talk about Candyland characters.
Tune in for our board game podcast. I'd be so into that.
But I mean, going back to Peppermint a little bit, still on the candy trail. I mean, I just loved as well, the Wizard of Oz fan in me loved the Munchkin Land dance reference when she's doing those like stomps and kicks. It was all these little touches. And it's so nice considering that Peppermint has gotten these notes a few times about you need to be more detail oriented. It's all about specificity. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad that, you know, either she listened to them or the outfit listened to them because she really knocked it out of the park here. I mean, to quote Ross about Alexis a couple weeks ago, she does seem to be gaining momentum. She won last week. If Sasha and Shay's pilot tanked for some reason, I'm pretty sure her Trinity would have won this week. So, yeah, maybe my prognosticated final three might experience some contention with Peppermint down the road, depending on how things may go. Let's finish things off here. We move from Munchkin Land to the person who dressed up as the Wicked Witch last week, Alexis Michelle, giving... I don't know, like brain tumor realness. Lita, just try to explain to me what was going on with this look.
Okay. So this was like a combination of both like not being, it was just like ordinary, but also like didn't even look that good. Like if you're going to play it safe, like at least look incredible. This to me looked like something that Pink would just like wear to the VMAs.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Like the whole look.
Well, it was like she borrowed it from Kimora Black.
Oh, no. Where's the sailor hat?
Oh, right. Sorry. She went for the brain tumor.
It can't fit over that big old brain of hers.
I did not like this. I hated the diamond, first of all. That was the only thing that stood out to me. I couldn't stop staring at it. And I completely agree. I think it was Michelle who said this, that from the neck up, it does look really cool. And then from the neck down, it doesn't make sense. I mean, I don't quite know what she was going for. I mean, good for her for, you know, she talks about wanting she doesn't usually show off her body. And so doing this was kind of liberating for her, which good for her, but it did not execute.
Also, like the black thing that she painted over her eyes, like it looked good, but also Detox like did the exact same thing last year. And so it was impossible for me not to compare.
Yeah, Detox and Alaska.
The latex look, right? I think it was when Detox did that with like the genie look. I mean, amidst the possible mimicry that might have taken place, I really enjoyed, as you said, Liana, her, again, if we cut off her head a la Vivacious and Darian Lake, put it in a box, I'm maybe describing another possible challenge that might take place. But yeah, it seemed like her head was really interesting. As much as I may sort of make fun of the bulbous thing sitting on her head, it did feel very sort of high art and a little off the beaten path, which is sort of what like the club kid atmosphere is all about. And I really liked her, even just like the touch of the neon lipstick against the black and white of the rest of her head popped out really nicely. But sort of like with Nina, I'm assuming that she just sort of like, okay, I'll just throw on this like black stripy stocking bodice like thing. And as a result, she got hit for it. I as we segue out into the pilots a little bit, I do want to ask you both, as I said before, Nina and Valentina or Tina are going to end up in the bottom two. Do you believe, based on this outfit partially, that Alexis should have been in the bottom two? Lita, let's start with you.
No, I don't think so. I think, like, even all of the deliberation that was happening before they picked the final two, I would have been upset if it wasn't automatically Valentina and Nina. That was just an unforgivable performance.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, because sometimes there are things where, you know, if it's close in the challenge, you can break it with the runway. But I think that it was so clear that those two needed to be in the bottom that they're, you know, I mean, maybe if Alexis had come out in, I don't know, like the rest of the 1820s outfit that we were talking about with Sasha with the hat. If she came out in the rest of that like stocking outfit, then maybe
in old timey pajamas.
Yeah, in old timey pajamas. Yes, then maybe, but I don't think so. Also, I just love the Mike, you mentioned this, but her lipstick, the like neon lipstick, which I think she must have borrowed Detox's brow kit from All Stars.
It seemed like she just borrowed Detox's face.
Yeah,
just general face.
Everything. Really possible.
Just borrowed Detox.
Yeah, Alexis Michelle pulled a Nicolas Cage and Face Off and just took Detox's face. That's the Face Off reboot that I want to see. Screw you, Baywatch. All right, let's get to the Rue TV upfront. This has been a supremely silly podcast, and I love everything about it. And it continues to be silly as we jump into Teats and ASCII by Sasha and Shay, this winning pilot, which I loved every single ounce of this pilot personally. Lita, what'd you think about it?
Oh, yeah, of course. And I think there are inevitable comparisons to Katya with the Russian. But I mean, I saw people on Twitter. I saw one person on Twitter say like, oh, so Sasha's just a low rent Katya. Like, first of all, Katya isn't even Russian. She just does the accent really well and is interested in it. Sasha like actually lived in Russia. And I just feel like you can't say like, oh, these two queens are both really interesting and they did the same accent once. So I'm shutting down all of those comparisons right now, even though I love both of those queens. But other than that annoying comparison, obviously, I love this. This is amazing.
Mm-hmm. They were in Toronto. The CN Tower can be seen in the background. The only reason I knew that is because we were just in Toronto.
You just missed it, Teats and ASCII, as they were probably interrogating people.
If only we could have gone to the filming. I really did like it. I thought it was fine. But when the cliffhanger line came out, oh my gosh, I started laughing out loud. I thought that was so funny.
Oh, good. Yeah, I was definitely like chuckling. Sorry to interrupt you. I was definitely chuckling a little bit, but that cliffhanger line maybe it was like the dad joke section of me, but I was like guffawing at it. It was so stupid, but it was so well edited and well produced that it really made it a fantastic bit.
Yeah, no, it was great. And I will say the espadrilles bit too, I thought was so funny. Those shoes are so ugly. Like, okay, I know that Toms, when you buy one, they like give a pair to somebody, but really, like, I'll buy another pair so that you don't have to wear espadrilles. But Sasha, the other thing I will say, Sasha's physical humor, I was really impressed with. I know, because I have a tendency to think of Sasha, because she sells herself this way, as this intellectual queen, but she really does have this kind of goofy physical humor that, you know, I wouldn't have thought her to really be a serious, I mean, she is a good contender, but I wouldn't have thought she would have won just because, you know, ultimately the whole thing, this whole competition, because RuPaul, the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race always has this kind of silly side, but we're starting to see that with Sasha, and I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think she doesn't vocalize it this episode, but like you said, even in the last episode, and I believe in the Snatch Game as well, she sort of was in her head a little bit about, like, you know, I usually take myself so seriously, can that necessarily reach out to another audience? But I think it also helps that, like this, and with the newscaster performance, the common denominator there is Shay Coulee. And I think having a scene partner that you can really buy into and lean into when you're not feeling so confident in yourself makes all the difference. But yeah, I mean, to get a little bit more specific about what I loved about this, I mean, I think it was a very clean concept from the get-go. Mm-hmm. It's super simple, right? It's a fashion police, but with a duo where one half is, you know, came straight out of a blaxploitation film and the other person came right from a Russian river. And it's really fun in that, you know, they're taking super simple concepts, but the simpler the better, especially when you're doing these, as you said, really, really short clips to sort of just, you know, give out the essence of what the show is. So they were able to really make it clean. I know in Untucked, they said they were worried because they had to cut stuff out as they didn't have enough time to rehearse. But this was a really clean, really great job from both of them. And this week in general just really shows how those two, in my opinion, are absolutely poised to have a spot in the final three. Where it goes mm-hmm. from there, I'm not entirely sure, but very big kudos to Sasha and Shay. I hope that even though, you know, Sasha's from New York and Shay is, bitch, I'm from Chicago, hopefully they find an opportunity to work together more, because it really is a beautiful pairing.
Mm-hmm. I love them. I didn't think I would like Sasha, but she's really growing on me now that we've seen more of her. So you go, girl.
All right, let's move on to Nina and Tina, Valentina and Nina. We've talked a little bit about this. We talked about how they purposely did not go in a la Curb Your Enthusiasm, saying, I'm going to improvise my way through a pilot. Lita, how did you think those results bore out as a result of that approach?
I feel like the Curb Your Enthusiasm reference is very apt, because I just, watching this, wanted to just hear the theme playing over it. As they were just ruining everything for themselves. Okay, now can someone please explain this premise to me? So they are they are sex workers, and they are busted by undercover cops, and they must be drag queens to get out of prison. Why?
I don't know.
They were already out of prison because they were in that crack house, right? When they were doing their makeup and they were doing the death drops. So they were already out of prison, or was that supposed to be in prison still?
Maybe there's some sort of like work release program where they're like, oh no, I'm going to get a job as a drag queen. You don't need to keep me in prison. Because then they have this plan to win RuPaul's drag race to, I don't know, prove they're drag queens. I think, like you said, Lita, it's confusing from the beginning in that if they're supposed to be women, which it seems like they are, considering that they're prostitution whoring themselves out to the nearest pit crew member, then they go to jail, then they find out, oh, let's be drag queens. That is there like a Mrs. Doubtfire thing, or
yeah, like the they were either already on? Drag queens or already women.
Yeah,
sorry to interrupt you, but
no, it makes no sense. This.
Well, first of all, you don't have to be a biological woman to be a whore. You would know that, Mike. sorry, I didn't get to read y'all, and this is my way of getting
absolutely
it.
Guilty as anyway. Charged.
It really did not make any sense. And it was so clear that they had no plan going in, and that showed in the final product. Also, going back to when they were actually doing the, we got to see the rehearsals. I loved it when they didn't have time to do the voiceover, and then Nina kept saying Nina and Valentina, and then Valentina was like, no, it's Tina. And then they show Valentina doing it, and she messes up also. Oh my goodness. It was just such a good representation of the hot mess that they were.
Yeah, when you can't get the own title of your own show right in your voiceover, you know it's a bad sign. I also love this horrible, like, they didn't even attempt humor until this one moment where they're like, all right, when you're a drag queen, you have to do a death drop. And Nina falls to the floor and she sits up, mugs to the camera, giant ass, like Michael Scott sized mug, and says, I thought a death drop meant you really die.
Oh,
and
God.
You could hear crickets drop dead from having to play themselves to death after the silence that pervaded the airwaves after Nina tried that joke.
I liked Valentina afterwards, because then she just goes like, ah! Why is this a thing?
This is like, maybe one reason why I really love this is because, like, this is very akin to like a Celebrity Apprentice task, where like crazy, horrible, unrehearsed things happen as a result of like make a commercial. And this is essentially like the result of one of those things. It's akin to, you know, in this most recent season where they did the salsa commercial and it ended up with them dragging the housewives around on the floor with black and white opera music playing over it. It was supremely ridiculous. And then wait, when Nina and Tina start just randomly making out with each other after they win RuPaul's Drag Race.
They saw Aja and Peppermint do it and they were like, that's a good idea.
Yeah, it's not like one of them went home immediately after that, right?
God, it was awful. I Yeah, the kiss of death. Oh my gosh. But Carson's clapping at the end was just and he's looking around. It's just oh my gosh, it's so awkward.
Yeah, they pulled a Jeb Bush. Please clap.
Just please clap.
I can do an entire podcast about Nina and Tina just inspecting it further, but this is probably one of the biggest whiffs I've seen from a cumulative team effort from Drag Race in a long time. I don't know. Can either of you think of an instance that comes to mind immediately of recent Drag Race history where in like a slight team or paired challenge, one pair or team just completely whiffs it?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm trying to think of, because the other two were really good and this one was just really bad.
Yeah.
I can't think of anything off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither. All of the biggest misses I can think of are individual.
Oh, you know what I can think of? Shakespeare season 7. Was it Mac Bitch?
Oh god.
I think it was the Max team with that. They also decided not to rehearse and look what happens.
LaQuisha Keani or whatever that was.
My
yeah,
god.
That was pretty bad.
I'm gonna have to watch that one after that because I love that for all the wrong reasons. All right, let's move on to the final pilot here. Mary Mother of Gay with Trinity, Peppermint, and Alexis. Liana, you said you loved this pilot. Give me your thoughts on it.
Yeah, I really liked this one. And maybe this is just because I like, especially, I've praised Alexis before. I'm kind of over her right now. But Trinity and Peppermint were really great. I mean, Trinity, talk about a scene stealer. There was one bit where she was, her face makeup, first of all, as the nun, was just absolutely fantastic. Like her old lady makeup. And then there was, I don't know how she makes these facial expressions, but she was just praying. And the scene, there was no voiceover. It just stayed on her. And I just started laughing. I don't know how she did it. I can't even describe it. I need to go back and look. But oh my goodness, I couldn't stop laughing. I don't know why. Hallelujah.
Hallelujah. Lita, are you preaching this as much as Liana is?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is the only one that was like something that could actually theoretically be a TV show, maybe, like two homophobic women have religious women have gay children and they need to figure it out, but it's like an uproarious comedy. I feel like that could exist for a season or two. It's the Sister Act reboot that we really deserve. Speaking of reboots.
Yeah. Damn you, Baywatch.
Yeah, I laughed out loud a lot at this, more so than I did for any of the other two. That doesn't necessarily mean I enjoyed it overall. Just like some of Trinity's lines just made me burst out laughing when she's like, just pray, ladies. I was just so into it. So I was really all about this as well.
Yeah, I will admit that Trinity, speaking of SNL, was channeling, I feel, a little church lady, but I feel like she still made it her own in a way in that I feel like she was a lot angrier and louder. I mean, Trinity does a fantastic job of just turning things up to 10 between her performance in the 90210 Ho Challenge. And now this, like you talked about before, she really shows that she's able to do comedy and not just be a pretty padded face. So she definitely stole the show. I mean, my notes literally say, Jesus Christ, Trinity. And I mean that in more ways than one. And I thought that Peppermint did a pretty good job as well. I feel like she popped enough and had enough of that sash. If you notice, she did have that, her notorious head bob in the beginning with the, oh my gay. And I will say that I personally do think I could see the criticism that Alexis was sort of fading into the background. I still think she was solid. It's almost like in the newscaster challenge where I feel like Alexis did a very solid job. She helped hunker down that show and keep that Naya Rivera interview on track, but it didn't necessarily pop like what happened with Sasha and Shay with the food section. So I think there's a difference between like being a good performer and being an exciting performer. And I don't think either one of those are bad. I think Alexis is a very good queen in terms of performing. She's shown that throughout the challenges this season, but because for some reason her character just didn't pop in comparison to the other two, that's why she sort of gets maligned for it. Do you agree?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I would definitely say that. And you know, she's a queen that will work very hard and is very prepared, but to be the winner of RuPaul's Drag Race, you just have to have it. You know what I mean? The it factor. And I feel like she just doesn't have it. Like, she's solid and she'll be a solid, you know, lovely fourth alternate, but I can't see her winning. When I look at Shay, I want to watch Shay. I want to watch Trinity. And with Alexis, I can appreciate her talent, but she just doesn't have that same magnetic, you know, aura that the other two or the other girls have.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Alexis, not necessarily from the pilot perspective, but from the response to the pilot perspective. We talked last week about her response to Tamar Braxton as a result of the green criticism, and she decides to take this opportunity on the runway to preface it by saying not to throw my sisters under the bus, but then she goes into, after Carson says that she took on more of a producer role instead of being in front of the camera, she says that, you know, essentially this all, everything that worked in this pilot essentially helped come from me. And Peppermint claps back about this a little bit, but it seems like Alexis is trying to save face a bit by saying the reason why you didn't see me as much or I didn't pop as much in front of the camera is because I was doing so much to support this pilot overall. Lita, did you agree with what Alexis was saying?
No, of course not. Because even if it was right, like, it's just such a bad look to say this. And I think the child on the panel, I can't remember his name.
Noah Calvin.
Yeah. The resident child. He pointed out, he was like, I don't like the way that she, you know, wasn't a team player and threw her teammates under the bus. And it's not a good look. And if you have to do that, then you didn't do enough. Like, the challenge, mm-hmm. you know, the challenge was what it was, and you need to do what you can to make yourself look good in the challenge. And you can't just do a bunch of stuff that no one can see and then claim it after you already get negative criticism.
Liana, I know we talked last week about the fact that Nina, for example, or there have been other cases where queens have had personality problems when rehearsing or doing other things, and as a result, rather directly or through their performance, they end up near the bottom. Do you think there's going to be a recurring problem here with Alexis, considering that this is the second week in a row where she's not necessarily talking back to the judges as much as she's sort of creating a kerfuffle in the judging deliberation by sort of talking back to the judges?
Yeah, I mean, she definitely has this need to, or this want to explain herself. And it's funny because we didn't see a whole lot of their practice, but we did see one bit where Alexis comes over and is like, did you get the tea on Kunt? And that was sort of portrayed to us with the music as her kind of being this bitch. But it's entirely possible that that was in the moment, that was actually perceived as a positive thing, and that she was running around actually, you know, being the organizer and getting everybody in the right positions and making sure that all the props were there and putting the pit crew in the right place. So we actually didn't see any of that, because I think it was Carson who said that she was being the producer. Like, it wasn't Alexis who brought that up initially. Mm-hmm. Or am I wrong?
No, you're right. Carson was the one who brought it up. And it's interesting as well, because this almost harkens back to Alexis' big meltdown during that one Untucked, where she says, you know, I help you girls all the time when I tell you things are out of sorts before you go on the runway. Why did no one tell me that I was doing something wrong? And it seems like Alexis sort of has this attitude where, like, she is helping everyone and she's doing a lot of things because she knows, you know, the production world very well. But as a result, for one reason or another, that's not coalescing into the performance of Alexis Michelle, basically.
Yeah.
It's interesting in that, like, she's helping others before she's really helping herself, from my point of view.
But it's weird because I don't see her doing it out of the fact that she cares about the others. I think it's because she likes to hear herself talk and likes her own opinions and likes to be in control. And that's why she's doing it. I think she's maybe trying to sell it as, oh, look about how much I care about y'all and I'm doing all of this for you. Why don't you care about me? But I don't know. It's kind of this attitude problem. I'm not loving it. I don't like the talking back to, you know, to the panel. Although I did love Peppermint. As soon as Alexis starts talking, Peppermint mm-hmm. gets this side eye look, even though one of her eyes is completely covered. Oh my gosh, it was so funny. She was like, I ain't taking this. I loved it.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, I'll still echo what I said last week in that Alexis is still a really fun villain from my perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not tired on her yet, and I think she's talented enough that she can make it at least a couple more rounds, but I think we'll have to see if this attitude thing becomes a bigger problem in future weeks. But skipping ahead to the results, Shay and Sasha win. They get $1,000 from the spa on Rodeo and a sickening supply of hair care products from Equage, which I also want to point out that I love the irony in that both challenges that Sasha Velour has won, the vegetarian wins the Hamburger Mary's coupon, and then the bald queen wins the hair care products. It's just, it's amazing irony.
Hey, Rue said she didn't have to use it on her head.
Oh boy.
Hair doesn't have to be on your head.
That's
she
very
needed
true.
A head contour kit.
That's next week's prize. She'll miss out on it by 1 week. But we have our bottom two here as Nina and Valentina. They're lip-syncing to Greedy by Ariana Grande. First, Lita, I know you're a big Ariana Grande fan. What did you think about Greedy as the song choice?
That's the biggest understatement in the world. I yes. love Ariana Grande. Everybody who's ever met me or followed me on Twitter knows this. I saw her in concert a couple months ago. It was incredible. My life will never be that good again. I love this song, and I was actually really surprised that this is the song they chose because I saw like the official Drag Race Twitter like teasing that they were going to do an Ariana Grande song, and I was like, oh, it's going to be Break Free or something like that. And this song was never actually a single, which is a crime. So I was really happy to see it on here and consequently extremely upset and anguished about the lack of respect it got.
Oh my God. All right. We need to talk about this because this was, if anything, I feel like season 9 might be remembered as the season of crazy lip syncs, because we've had Charlie Hyde's and the no good, terrible, very bad lip sync. We had Eureka get, you know, randomly pulled out.
Medically evacuated.
We had Peppermint shooting Cynthia Lee Fontaine away from her second attempt at Drag Race. And now we have this. I wouldn't say they're necessarily epic lip syncs. They're just absolutely insane lip syncs. Liana, give me your thoughts overall, just about everything that happened over the course of this 5 minutes.
Oh my goodness. I wish I could have somehow recorded my thoughts as this whole process was happening, because I was definitely with the judges. I was like, oh, is she going to leave her mask on? Wait, her mask is still on. This is lip sync. And then I thought maybe this is a makeup thing and she didn't do her makeup. And then Rue, oh my goodness, the line, the voice that Rue used. This is a lip sync for your life. We need to see your lips. I wish I could do that justice. Oh my goodness. I was terrified. I was scared of RuPaul for a moment. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. I don't even know. My mind is racing just like it was when I was watching. And then this is a lip sync. What part of it do you not understand? And then, oh my gosh, she took it off and then she didn't know the words. And I don't even know what Nina was doing, but it didn't even matter. It was hard.
Okay, Lita, give me your unfiltered thoughts about these moments.
I was thinking, I think I live tweeted my thoughts about this and I just went back and found it. It was, yes, this song, hashtag Drag Race, then Valentina Bish, what you doing? Then did she literally just forget about it? Then nope, what the hell is going on? Then capital letters, how do you not know the words to this song? This is a bop. And then finally, yes, this is so disrespectful to Ariana Grande.
Oh, yes, that's you're coming at it from like the Ariana superfan angle as well, which is like totally different from like everyone else.
There are not that many words to that song. It's like, I'm greedy. You know that I'm greeting for love. Know that I'm greedy for love. It's not hard. This was like not Nicki Minaj's verse in Monster. This was like a verse and a chorus to a pop song, like a very radio friendly pop song.
All right, well, let's try to break down the rationale here. So multiple choice question here. Why do we think Valentina didn't know the words to this song? Number of words aside. A, was she so cocky about not being in the bottom two that she didn't study? B, did she just draw a complete blank and didn't remember any of the words? Or C, a little bit of both? Lita, let's start with you.
I think C, but it's also like, you are in the gay community. Please know all the lyrics to the album Dangerous Woman.
She just was in her head. I think once she realized how bad it was just, she got locked up in her own head and she's like an Untucked. She wasn't even really listening to the song until the very end, like right before they got called out. So I don't know if this was a Charlie Hyde's moment and she had just given up. I really don't know what was going through her head. So yeah. I answer D. I have no fucking clue.
That's always the good. Yeah, D is the mystery answer, the invisible answer that you can really only act as if you really don't believe you have a clue.
Yeah, I mean, in her confessional, she's like, I just got up there and I was so nervous and just blah, blah, blah. And her, you know, I'm so embarrassed. Like, I think she was trying to pass it off as it was just a total blank. But if you actually put in the work and you know the song, like, that just doesn't happen.
Yeah,
that's such a good impression. And I just want to say,
I was just very nervous. And so I did not know what to do. Like, it's, we talked about this before about how Valentina is very particular with the way she says things and the words that she uses in the confessionals, that sometimes they come across as almost a little scripted. But I mean, yeah, it's tough because it's almost like, whether through hubris or through something else, it made it a very tough sequence to watch. As someone who had been supporting Valentina from the get-go, I was really, really saddened to see the fallout, not only from this episode, but through Untucked as well, where she, like, runs for the curtains and, like, weeps into them. It's very clear that she... I mean, I think it's made worse by the fact that she was such a front runner and that she really had a chance of winning this. It makes it so much worse, and that she's, like... the finish line was there in her sights, and then she basically shot herself in both legs when in the final stretch, because no matter what the circumstances may be, and that has to be absolutely crushing. It's akin to Survivor, spoiler, Survivor Micronesia, Bay Cere Fields doesn't make the final two and is heartbroken beyond all belief. It's not as close as that, but I was feeling pangs of that with what happened with Valentina.
You had to bring up Cere.
I know. I wanted to just get a rise out of Liana to bring up Cere.
We're all bracing for Wednesday, like, not okay.
No, my gosh, I know. Seriously. I am now reading all terms and conditions that I signed from here on out. My goodness. Yeah, oh, Valentina. I mean, it was sort of a medical evacuation for her too. But
she got a case of she lost her voice. That was her medical condition, right?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Her lips fell off.
Her lips fell off. I mean, although in her defense, nothing is going to be nearly as bad as Charlie Hyde, so at least she can hide behind that.
But Rue didn't stop the lip sync for Charlie Hyde's.
Yeah, so I was about to say the same thing, yet I would disagree with you a little bit. I think this is worse just because, like, Charlie, like, was still lip syncing. The thing is, like Rue said, it is a lip sync. It's not miming Cirque du Soleil, which was Valentina was, like, doing her best at the beginning to just sort of dance it off and try to embody the lyrics. But at the end of the day, you're trying to pretend like you are singing the song. If you are not doing that, you are not succeeding. And even though Charlie was a resolute statue, the Colossus of Rhodes, standing in the middle of that man-made stage, she at least was mouthing the words. And Valentina failed on that first essential front. So even though I love Valentina with all my heart, I have to put this below Charlie's personally.
Yeah, and it's called a lip sync for your life. It reminded me of, like, Brooke from The Amazing Race. Like, if I had to lip sync for my life, my family would starve.
Oh, yeah. Like, that's a lip sync for your ladle.
Yes, it's literally for your life, girl. Like, figure it out.
At least no one was yelling from the back, do something, Valentina.
I think they were all, I'm going to be so intrigued to see the fall. Because in Untucked, we don't see what happens from the other queen's perspective after the other queen is eliminated. We see that in the beginning of the next episode. I'm going to be so intrigued to see how they react to this. I have a feeling that maybe one reason why they didn't do anything is because they were so stunned and confused as to what was going on. It was an incredible TV moment. I mean, as awkward and cringy as it was unbelievable television. And it made, as you said before, when Rue pulls out the parent voice, like, you know something is up, that someone seriously screwed up. And, like, Rue's final words to Valentina, I don't have them verbatim, but weren't they something along the lines of, like, I really believed in you. And basically she was implying, like, and you screwed that up.
She's not mad. She's just disappointed.
And that's so bad. Yeah.
Oh, my God. It was definitely a Tyra Banks moment. But, like, we're rooting for you. We were all rooting for you. Scary. I was scared.
Well, let's eulogize Valentina a bit here. And we can maybe incorporate this last lip sync in as well. But Valentina really came across as the GC, the golden child of season 9 for quite some time. Though Brent brought up an interesting point last week that he had felt, and maybe he was predicting what was to come with Valentina, that Valentina, you know, had been very hot in the beginning, but was starting to cool off a bit. You know, she really hadn't won a challenge since the beginning, and maybe that might have coalesced in her fall from grace here. Lita, give me your overall thoughts here on Valentina's run on season 9.
She's perfect. She's beautiful. She looks like Linda Evangelista. She's a model.
She could walk out wearing a diaper or a matador outfit.
Yeah, exactly. They could be like, Valentina, your smile is beautiful. I mean, I loved her. I'm still a big fan of hers. I'm actually sad. I'm going home to Pittsburgh today. She's performing there tonight, but I won't be back in time. But that's something that I like would still see even after that. Maybe especially like her. One of her first performances after that could be interesting. But I never thought that she was going to win, but I actually thought that she was someone who had a good shot of making the finale basically the whole time, because even though she wasn't really in the top, I just couldn't really see a challenge where she would really just not be able to rise to the occasion at all. And ultimately it wasn't a challenge that took her out. It was a lip sync, which I didn't really see coming. And I really thought starting this lip sync that Nina just had too many strikes against her. And as long as Valentina could decently hold her own, that Nina was going home no matter what.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I really thought that Nina was going to go home until the child on the panel was like, is she going to take the mask off? Because it was like, oh no, what's happening? And you just get this like sinking feeling in your stomach. Like, oh no. Oh, I feel so bad that this is the way it ended for her, because I did feel, you know, even going off of what Brent said, that even though she hadn't had, you know, she'd been safe the past couple weeks, I still felt that, okay, it's okay. She can be safe for a few weeks and then the next challenge, you know, she'll be able to come out and be in the top. But to have her fall like this was really heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, looking at her trajectory as well, this was the first time that she was in not even just the bottom two, but like receiving negative remarks on the runway, which is absolutely insane thinking about it. But it just shows how strong she was. I'll still say that, you know, in spite of how much I really have come to enjoy people like Trinity, she really, Valentina, was the surprise of the season for me, in that I expected nothing from her coming in. And she, from the get-go, really blew me away with just how confident she was in terms of her aesthetic, in terms of her comedy, in terms of her just general performative abilities, this lip sync aside. And I agree with you, Liana. It's a sad way to see her go out, but it's a big way to see her go out. Can I speak on behalf of all of us when I say if and when there's an All-Stars 3, if Valentina's in good standing with RuPaul, she has a guaranteed spot on it?
Yeah, I would second that.
Yeah, I'll agree. She's not at the top of my list, but...
Again, it's a big if. I know that, like, you know, Courtney Act and Rue, for example, Courtney Act would be great on an All-Star season, but I know her and Rue have some bad blood. Depending on how Valentina has handled this, I haven't checked her social media yet, so I'm not entirely sure how she's handled all the feedback from this. As long as, you know, she doesn't badmouth RuPaul, and we're going to see at the reunion how that's handled as well in a few weeks. As long as she's in good standing, I feel like when that comes around, she'll not only have a spot on it, she'll be poised to do a pretty good job in it. Just because, again, she's such an all-around good performer. But with that shock elimination, we are down to six queens. Next week, the makeover challenge, as they make over members of, not the pit crew, it seems, but the actual camera crew from RuPaul's Drag Race. Lita, what did you think about this challenge from the onset?
This is fun. I am always going to prefer the makeover challenge / loved ones visit in one, because I like both of those things. But this is cute. This is fun. They're doing something different.
I'm
Liana,
so excited.
Who do you think from the get-go is poised to do well and not do well, just from our perspective at the moment?
Ooh, so I always look to queens that I think that they can paint someone else's face, because that's always like Coco Montrese can do her own makeup and beat her face for the gods, but she cannot do anyone else's makeup. So I would think that, Nina might actually really have the skills, because she's just so good and so creative that I think and maybe it's just because she's used to painting her own face, but I think she could really step it up. I'm worried about Peppermint. I'm worried about Alexis. I think that they might struggle in this upcoming challenge.
All right, so we shall see next week as we move forward into episode 10. Only, you know, I think 5 or so more weeks of RuPaul's Drag Race left, which is crazy, but the season has been really ramping up into something absolutely insane if this lip sync from the past episode is any indication. We'll be back next week covering it all. But for now, let us know your thoughts on this elimination, on this episode, on the pilots, on the final six queens moving forward. We'd love to hear from you. You can always reach out to us on Twitter. I am at a Mike Bloom type. Liana is at Liana Boras, LianaBoraas. Lita is at Lita Tweeted. And Brent in Abstentia is at One Lucky Gay. If you're not already, please make sure you're subscribed to our RuPaul's Drag Race feed. Just search RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9 in the iTunes store. And of course, we're very appreciative of all feedback and ratings and reviews you may give. We're not going to be any Alexis Michelle's and question your judgment on any of that. We are so grateful for any sort of feedback we may receive from our listeners. And we thank you for our listenership as we talk about Candyland, Baywatch reboot, and all the fixes. Make sure you're also subscribed to the Reality TV Wrap-Ups feed as well. That way you get coverage, Big Brother Canada 5 coverage, which just finished. I know The Amazing Race is still going. We've got some Team Ninja Warrior in the works as well. Dancing with the Stars is finishing up. The Bachelorette is about to premiere in the next couple days. So it's heating up as apropos for the summer season on Reality TV Wrap-Ups. To finish things off, can we come up with some sort of hashtag for people who made it all the way to the end of this podcast?
Matador Curse?
We have Matador Curse. I was thinking Candyland Queens as well.
Yeah, we could do something with Candyland. That's pretty funny.
Lord Licorice Queen. Yes, Lord Licorice.
Yes, Lord. Okay, yep, I love that. And then you can look up with licorice. I can't spell licorice right now, but yes, Y-I-S, Lord Licorice. I would say let's get him on season 10, but he's a fictional character. What the hell am I saying? Just shows how crazy this podcast has been, but I've had so much fun. Lita, thank you for coming on the past few weeks. You have been truly a delight, and hopefully we'll be able to get you on at least one more time before we finish the season. But it seems like for right now, the OG Trinity of myself, Liana, and Brent will be back next week covering episode 10. Thank you all so, so much for listening. We will talk to you next week, but for now, sashay away.